From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. Just days after the 2016 presidential election, a woman named Amy Siskind decided that she would start keeping track of all the outrageous things our then-president-elect was engaging in. She continued her documentation project week after week, posting it to social media. It soon went viral, and Siskind developed a formal tally of Trump's doings. On her website, she explains that, quote, on a weekly basis, the list tracks specific news stories representing eroding norms under the current regime. Taken together, they reveal a nation pushed toward authoritarianism, the wielding of unchecked governmental authority by one person or group at the expense of the freedom of those who oppose them. The list, which is being preserved at the Library of Congress and is also available online, continues to track the Trump administration. And the first year's worth of documentation is now out in the form of a book. Amy Siskind joins me. Her book is simply called The List, A Week-by-Week Reckoning of Trump's First Year. She's also president and co-founder of The New Agenda. Welcome to the program, Amy.
Thank you so much for having me.
So I'm sure you've been asked this question many, many, many times, but when you first wrote this, started tallying this list, did you have a clear sense of what your goal was in tracking these issues? Or was it in a way, a sort of personal way to keep track because there were just too many things happening all at once and you didn't want to forget?
Well, it didn't have any grand vision when I started. I just noticed as he was taking office and when he actually had his campaign, that he was doing a lot of things that were atypical to a candidate, be it Democrat or Republican, that he didn't really have policies or an agenda or a vision, and that he was stoking fears and playing on the hatred of others. And as someone who grew up as a Jewish American and being familiar with the Holocaust, there were a lot of things that were startling about the way that he was targeting marginalized communities and building on that to stoke his base. And shortly after he won the election, I started to read up on authoritarianism. And one of the things that I took away from that is that things would be changing slowly and subtly, and the importance of writing things down, because you would be like a frog in water coming to boil degree by degree. And you wouldn't notice what was happening to you until it was too late. And Sarah Kendzior in particular, who wrote the foreword for my book, had been really pushing people to write down things as they were today, because you won't believe that these things exist a year from now. So in between that, reading that, and then I have the lucky fortune to be close to Eleanor Roosevelt's home here back in New York. She's been my North Star my entire life. I rode up to her home, Valkill, that same day. This is the day to, you know, bring back memories. The day that Trump was attacking the New York Times, the cast of SNL, and the cast of Hamilton on his Twitter account. And it was after a week and a half of record number of hate crimes, as reported by the Southern Poverty Law Center. So I drove up to Valkill, and on the way home, I just knew what I had to do. And that first Saturday, I started to write things down, and in the early weeks there was 9 items and then 18 items. Today there's 163 items a week. So there was no grand plan. It was just a sense to write things down so we wouldn't forget.
What was the, and what is the sort of definition, what meets the criteria to make it onto the list? I mean, if something happens to or something goes on around Jared Kushner, does it make it onto the list? If it's something that is related to Donald Trump, but outside of his duties as president, does it make it on the list?
It's a great question. And in the early weeks, there was a lot of confusion because there would be the typical Republican versus Democratic fights over, say, Obamacare or tax policy. And those kind of items are not in the list because those are normal to our democracy. What might find its list, its way to the list, but related to Obamacare, is when people with disabilities were protesting outside of McConnell's office and they were handcuffed and dragged off their wheelchairs and dragged away. Or when McConnell got rid of decades-old rules in the ways we pick our Supreme Court justices in the Senate, or more recently got rid of the blue sky provisions and Senate's for picking of judges. So it's meant to capture things that are atypical to our democracy and also things that are happening to marginalized communities, rights and protections, some decades old being taken away, things being done to our environment, things disappearing from websites, which is another hallmark of authoritarianism, attacks of dissent of all kinds, attacks of our media, attacks of corporations, things that smell more like authoritarianism that are not normal. I mean, take, for example, today, everybody else in America is filing their tax returns. Trump is not filing. He might be filing his, but he's not sharing those with the American people. There was a whole lot of screaming about that last year. This year, it's kind of a quiet whimper because we've normalized that.
Mm. And today being Tuesday, the 17th of April, that you and I are speaking. So you mentioned McConnell and the changing of the rules of Supreme Court nominees. Now, that happened before Trump came into power. And of course, McConnell isn't part of the Trump administration, but is a leader in Trump's party. So you were also chronicling things that the party of this president was engaged in. I mean, would something that a Democrat did that was also particularly shocking, say, you know, didn't stand up strongly enough to authoritarianism, make the list?
Well, I have noted the steady stream of Republicans who are deciding not to run. And I sort of view them as characters in my book. Some of them, like Graham, have this sort of strange trajectory where in the early weeks of the list, Graham was with McCain and Amy Klobuchar off assuring our allies, our NATO allies, that we were still going to be with them, even though it turns out we were not going to be with them. And then later in the weekly list, Graham does this complete 180 where he and Grassley, their first criminal referral for the Senate Judicial Committee was against Christopher Steele and nothing to do with Russians. So that struck me as odd. Other things that have struck me as odd, starting with Jason Chaffetz, who by, you know, the one night just like left town, although he came back for the repeal Obamacare vote, but he just left town suddenly. And then that was followed by Daryl Issa, Trey Gowdy saying they weren't going to run, most recently Paul Ryan. And so then this unusual pattern of very senior Republicans who have very high standing in their party and have important positions trying to leave town and leave Congress. Things on the Democratic side I might cite are when certain Democratic elected officials didn't attend the inauguration or dressed a certain way for Trump's inauguration. So things that they do that are atypical to a democracy.
So it's sort of, if it doesn't meet the normalcy test, it makes it onto the list.
Right. Hmm. And very little of it, the thing that I found is very little is Republican versus Democrat right now. Huh. If I were to ask you rhetorically, like, what is Republican policy for the next 6 months? You'd have a hard time answering because there's very little of the traditional back and forth right now between our parties. So much more of the conversation that we're having right now is trying to avoid becoming an authoritarian regime, you know, and saving our democracy. And if you look at things now, the person who is making all the decisions and wavering all over in those decisions, but making them alone, is Donald Trump. And increasingly, and this is a pattern throughout the book, he's been consolidating power by either leaving positions unfilled or filling them with sycophants that will just go along with whatever he says.
Hmm. Now, does the Mueller investigation of Trump enter into the list?
Yes. So, and I've been tracking several things that could lead to his demise. I personally do not believe he'll make it to the end of his term.
To Trump's the demise of Trump's political career, you mean?
Yes. Yeah. Yes. And so one is, yes, developments in the Mueller probe, and people can use this as a resource as well. For example, when Michael Cohen's offices got raided last week, if you look in the table of contents, there are a number of items related to Michael Cohen and all the other issues that he's had related to the investigation beyond the stuff that we're discussing now that he could be possibly in trouble for. So I trace the Mueller investigation, but I trace other things that largely are not getting covered. I'll give you an example. In last year, I made the Politico 50 last summer, and they asked us all, 50 of us, to say what is not being covered in the media that should. And I said Cambridge Analytica. And when you read through the book, you're going to see lots of items.
Aha, because you were actually following it.
Yes, you're going to see lots of items in this book that relate to our election, and it might not have been a fair election. And items that many cases got single coverage were one of 20 or 30 items in a week that happened related to our election, and because of all the chaos, are forgotten by the next week, which is a continuing pattern in the chaos we're living in. And hence the importance of it.
Right. I mean, I as a journalist, I've been doing this for more than 16 years now, doing what I do. And I've never seen a news cycle be this fast paced. And this seems to be a big impetus for your book as well. The sheer speed at which things are happening, the churn of events is so overwhelming that we don't remember what happened last week, sometimes even a day or two ago. I mean, this to me is a good reason to keep your book handy.
Yeah, and I'll give you an example. Last week for the weekly list, the media was all over this story about Pruitt. I mean, 80% of the
Scott
media.
Scott Pruitt, EPA head, yeah.
You know, who is going to find the next story about the kleptocracy and the corruption in the EPA? Which was interesting, but you know, in my list that week, there was over 150 items, and that was 20 of them. Hmm. And I purposely put them down below because everyone in the media reads my list at the end of the week. And I wanted them to see, and I purposely put this at the top of the list every week, what's happening to the marginalized communities, the information that's disappearing. That week, breast cancer information was taken down from a website, which is a common occurrence.
A government website?
Yes. Hmm. Information on, and also low income availability to get breast screenings and so forth was taken down from the website. That's the same week that the Department of Homeland Security announced they were going to start to maintain a database on journalists and bloggers. And that didn't get any coverage either. And I put that as my first item in the list because to me that is like, hello, here we are again in Hitler's regime. But those are the kind of things that I draw attention to. And a lot of them are only getting covered in their local media outlets. There was a story a few weeks ago about an LGBT teacher who was fired because she wanted to have something about in the school curriculum about that. There's stories every week about Trump's ICE, which, you know, to me in my book, as you read it, you're going to find they're very similar to the uprising of Hitler's Gestapo, the way they've been rounding up people, the way they've been working with local companies like Motel 6 or 7-Eleven to round up people, or it's just the heartless, cruel way that we have become in this country, the whitening of America. And the book captures those items, and they get very little media coverage in the chaos.
So how do you hope or expect, I should say, your book to be viewed years from now after the end of the Trump administration, regardless of how this administration comes to an end, and we hopefully return to some level of normalcy? In fact, I don't know if our country will ever be normal again, but how do you hope for this book to be used?
Yeah, so one thing that we cite, and this was important to me in framing the book and the way Sarah frames it in her foreword, and I believe as well, you know, this idea that we were this perfect democracy before did not exist. And Sarah says it out loud. We took a country from Native Americans. We rose on the back of slavery that we haven't recognized. So there are plenty of faults to our democracy. But what I'm hoping that the list does is give us a trail guide back to as close as we can get to a democracy. I think there are so many things that have happened that are alarming that get, as you said, very, very little coverage week by week. So this is meant to be a trail guide back when this is all over for us to remember all the things that have quietly been undone, all the regulations that have been deconstructed.
Could be a good handbook for a future president to undo everything that Trump undid.
Yeah, and actually, Tom Steyer paid to deliver. They all were delivered to every member of Congress last week, so they all have their own copy. But Trump has, in addition to leaving a lot of the executive branch unstaffed, half of the key roles are still unstaffed, a lot of the people that he's put into position are basically deconstructing their own agencies within. So when you have something like a Hurricane Maria, we're so unprepared and so understaffed, or staffed with people that are totally inadequate for the jobs that they're in because they happen to work on the Trump campaign. This is going to be a list of things that need to be fixed and things that we have lost quietly that you'll forget until you read the book. Information that's been wiped away, rights and protections taken away from marginalized communities, from women, from our environment, week after week after week, and the whitening of America as we stop the flow of refugees. By the way, the Syrians that he cared so much about, the Syrian people, we've let in 11 Syrian refugees. Yeah. 2018. Right. So those are the kind of things that get captured in the list, the unstaffed positions, the whitening of America as we seek to deport people who aren't white and stop people who are not white from coming into our country. It's changed the fabric of our country in alarming ways very quickly.
Do you worry that you might end up with a book about the second year of Trump's presidency next year?
I do believe he won't see the end of his term. We might see the full second year. I'm already about halfway there. I'm on week 75 now. And the lists are just so much longer, you know, that this year's list would be over 1,000 pages. So it's, you know, we'll have to figure out what to do with the next year's list. But it's become more alarming because he's basically now has taken away so many of the barriers that we learned about in high school history that could be checks and balances. It's alarming to me how power has consolidated so quickly into the hands of one person and how our government increasingly looks like the Trump Organization, run by one person and surrounded by 20 sycophants. And anyone who has a differing opinion, like McMaster, like Cohn, is shown the door and maybe replaced and maybe not replaced because he's his best communications director and apparently the best chief of staff as well. So to be determined.
Well, finally, Amy, having so carefully tracked since the beginning of the Trump administration, everything that has happened, do you feel like you have a sense of the patterns, not just of the administration as a whole, but of the president himself, a pattern of his behavior that may help us understand or make some kind of vague prediction as to how he will react in the coming months?
Yes. Sadly, yes. I've been inside Donald's head and watching him every day since November 2016. I haven't taken a day off. And so there's two things that he cared about throughout. And if you look at his behavior, it's very consistent. I mean, even when he started his campaign, he was attacking the Mexican rapists. In week 73, he's still attacking the Mexican rapists and still the New York Times and still the Washington Post. So he hasn't changed throughout this time. If you look at it in this construct, he cares about two things, making money and staying in power. So the only piece of legislation that passed was the tax bill, and that's something that personally enriched him. He's doing outrageous things, he and his family, to enrich themselves, sending his son to speak with the president of India because it turns out they had problems with a project in Mumbai. You know, so these things come out week after week, and in the chaos, we forget about them. But in terms of staying in power, that's what alarms me even more, because when Sally Yates got fired, we said, that's the end. And when Comey's got fired, we said, that's the end. You can count on him doing whatever it takes now to stay in power. But I did sense a shift starting in week 67 when he went on Jeanine Pirro's show on a Saturday, which is a low rating show and very typical of his behavior. And it was right after the Porter scandal and a slew of other scandals when he couldn't get the narrative back. And right after that, he made a major shift to just consolidating power and just making decisions. And if you look back in the last 7 or 8 weeks, everything that we have done as a country has been determined by one man. And that is the pattern now. I think he is in trouble from three different angles. One is the Me Too movement, which to me would be poetic justice if it takes him down. But what's happening now with a Cohen being raided, and the tip of the iceberg with the two women that we know of. And I'm sure there'll be more to come. The second is the Mueller probe. And the third is Cambridge Analytica. I continue to maintain there are a lot of things in this book. If you look at North Carolina, the day of voting, people went in blue districts to vote and their names were not on the rolls, whereas in red districts, everything was fine. So you start to tie these dots together of Cambridge Analytica, what they were doing with the Facebook data, their ties to Russia, Russia's ties to our election, Russia knowing to target African-American woman in Michigan, where he won by 10,000 votes. All of these things start to tie together, and you start to ask yourself the question, and hopefully it's being answered by Mueller's team, was there something that happened with our election that day?
Well, Amy, I want to thank you so much for joining us today. Give out the website where people can read the weekly list online.
Sure. It's theweeklylist.org. And it goes up, it's a Saturday to Saturday list. It usually goes up late Saturday night. And I encourage everyone to look at the pictures too, because we spend a lot of time selecting the picture for each week. And the pictures, if you go back and look at them, tell a story. There are some of them in the book that I think were the most important images that I could only select six, but the website keeps it fresh, and it's, I'm going to keep going as long as he's in power.
That's theweeklylist.org. We'll post a link to it. Thank you so much, Amy, for joining us. Good luck with the book.
Thank you so much for having me.
My guest is Amy Siskind, author of The List, a week-by-week reckoning of Trump's first year. She's also the president and co-founder of The New Agenda. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also find us on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, and Vimeo. Thank you so much, Amy. Appreciate it.
Thank you.